Stand, please. Foyer, foyer, foyer. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its honorable court. Be seated, please.
Good morning, Your Honor. Sitting please the court, I am James Jukes, and I'm representing Vinma Calhoun in this case today. This case is reminiscent of the robust and less than politically correct play.
Mr. Fuchs?
Yes.
Would you move to where the microphone is so we can record you, please?
Yes, I'm sorry.
This play is reminiscent of the robust but less than politically correct play Annie Get Your Gun, in which Annie Oakley and Frank Butler contest who is the better shot. Although it is clear that Miss Oakley is the better shot, nonetheless, she ultimately yields to Mr. Butler because, as she is reminded of her own words, you cannot get a man with a gun. In this particular case, the selecting official, Wanda Peterson Parker, discovered that she could not make the correct decision with a gun to her head. And there was a gun to her head because my client, Miss Calhoun, was vastly superior for the position, as Miss Wander Peterson Parker, the selecting official, testified. There were four categories.
She gave conflicting testimony, didn't she?
Well, Your Honor, she ultimately did falter a little bit, but she emphatically...
I thought in her deposition she was pretty clear one way and at a trial another.
No, I think that... she, in fact, ultimately was very clear, but even that would be a dispute of fact,
meaning,
Your Honor.
Ultimately meaning after she first said the opposite.
She faltered at one point. She did not say that throughout her deposition, but even that would be a dispute of fact, Your Honor, in which credibility should ultimately be something that would be determined by a fact finder.
Did she falter as to who was more qualified, or faltered as to whether she thought there was discrimination?
She faltered as to whether or not she felt that there was ultimate discrimination, but other times she did state that there was discrimination, and she certainly stated that she felt that she might be retaliated against.
Right, I'm asking, did she ever falter on the question of who was more qualified?
She did not falter on the question of who's more qualified, no. Never. And there were four categories in which she did rate the three candidates, and in only one of them did the candidate who was selected even come close to Ms. Calhoun. Further, of the three selectees, there was only one who was not African American, and that was the candidate who was selected. The agency even admits that there was a pre-selection. The only question was whether or not the pre-selection was motivated by discrimination. This court has held in cases that go back to ACA versus Washington Hospital Center that when it is unreasonable for the employer to make the type of selection that it has made, then it is something for the fact finder to consider.
What is the evidence on their relative qualifications?
The evidence on their qualifications is the testimony of the selecting official, Wanda Peterson Parker. The evidence is also various evaluations that Ms. Calhoun submitted. The evidence is also the fact that in another position, Ms. Calhoun was rated better than two of the selectees by the HR resources.
Well, I'm thinking of the first job, though.
Yes.
Okay.
That is the testimony of Wanda Peterson Parker. It is also...
What about the evidence on whether Whitson knew who was in the applicant pool or that the plaintiff was in the applicant pool?
Well, if Mr. Whitson knew who was in the applicant pool, he should not have known that because the selection process had not closed.
Indeed, he couldn't know it, right? He hadn't closed, so he couldn't know who was going to apply.
Then he should not have stated that Ms. Bradfield was the most qualified candidate. He couldn't have stated that, and by stating that, he was in fact giving an order, since he could not possibly have known, and yet he made a statement as to who was the most qualified.
Well, how many people worked for him?
There were numerous people who worked for him, but it was clear who the people could apply were.
Are you talking about 20 or 100 people?
There were about 20 people who could have applied.
So he's got a section, let's say, with 20 people.
Yes.
And if he's of the view that Ms. Bradfield is the most qualified in the, of the 20, then why does he need to find out who's actually in the applicant pool?
Because the position was, in theory, open to people in other agencies and other individuals as well. And he wasn't even supposed to know that Ms. Bradfield had applied for that position.
Did people from other agencies apply?
I believe that some people from other agencies did apply, yes. Okay.
But the plaintiff is from his own, was one of his supervisees, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Is the plaintiff one of the 20? You said Mr. Whitson's section had approximately 20 people.
Yes, I believe so.
Is the plaintiff one of the 20?
Yes, I mean, he was actually not her supervisor at that time. He had been her
Was she one of the 20?
She was one of the 20 who could have been selected,
so,
yes.
So a jury, what evidence would a jury have from which it could conclude that Mr. Whitson's pre-selection was motivated by an intention to discriminate against African-American females?
Well, it's not simply discrimination on the basis of race, but also discrimination on the basis of retaliation, because
Can we deal with my question first?
By all means, Your Honor. The evidence would be Ms. Peterson-Parker's testimony that she believed that in view of all the different criteria, which she went into rather minutely and exactly, that Ms. Calhoun was vastly more qualified. It would also be...
I guess it's a difficult question for me to formulate, so you may not understand what I'm trying to get at. There was a job vacancy that was open until a certain date. Mr. Whitson told Mrs. Peterson-Parker that he thought one person was the most qualified. Mrs. Parker testified that she was concerned that if she didn't pick that person, she might be retaliated against because there was this testimony about Mr. Whitson discriminating racially. Is that correct or not?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Now, the question is, how could a jury find that Mr. Whitson would have known that your client was going to apply for this job, as distinct from whether or not he violated personnel regulations by pre-selecting someone?
Well, the agency really wants to have it both ways, Your Honor, because on one hand, if by the same way that he would know that Ms. Bradfield would be applying for that job. And if he didn't know that Ms. Calhoun would be applying for the job, then he wouldn't know that Ms. Bradfield would be applying for the job.
Well, didn't he says? Go ahead.
I just want to be clear what evidence there is from which a jury could reasonably find that he knew or had to have known that your client was going to apply for this position.
Well, the evidence is indirect, of course, but this court has held that indirect evidence of...
But you have testimony from Ms. Peterson-Parker that, although he didn't know for sure beforehand, he knew who was eligible and who could apply, and the implication from that is that expectation that your client was likely to apply because it was a job, was the next one up for her. This is in your favor. I want to be sure. You seem to be acting as if we're trying to trick you into this question. I want to be sure you understand this is a question put in your favor, not opposed to you.
No, I understand. I'm sorry.
So the question that Judge Rogers is asking is, if your claim is that that the supervisor discriminately selected one person over your client, The question is, how did he know your client was a possible person to begin with? And I thought you had testimony to the effect that she was a likely person because she was in the group of people who were GS-13s or whatever it was, who were likely to apply for this kind of position.
That is right. I'm sorry, yes.
That's the argument you made in your brief.
Yes, that is correct. And in addition to that, of all those people who could have applied, she and Ms. Bodie were the two most qualified of that pool, and they were the only two African-Americans. So Your Honor is correct.
Now, Mr. Whitson, I guess it is, says, this is at 103, Ms. Bradfield worked for me for several years in increasingly responsible positions. Her work was exemplary, performance outstanding. Ms. Bradfield had performed work similar to the work required by the announced position, but at a lower grade. The nature of the work was of critical importance to the organization and required that the selectee be able to hit the ground running. So is it fair to say that Ms. Bradfield was doing this job or something like it before she got promoted into this position?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe so. Those are conclusory statements that I do not believe demonstrate anything, as opposed to the rather concise, minute breakdown that Ms. Peterson-Parker gave.
Wasn't the job managing a website or something like that?
But it also involved communications. Communications was an extremely vital part of that job, and Ms. Bradfield even refused to speak to an interagency group.
Okay.
I see that I'm running out of time, so perhaps I should reserve the remainder for a rebuttal.
Is there any time to reserve?
Can I make one final statement?
We will give you a minute for rebuttal.
Okay. But there was one other thing that I did want to say, and that is that under the Equal Pay Act, there should have been a claim that was brought to the Federal Court of Claims. Thank you, Your Honors.
Good morning. My name is Clara Whitaker. I'm an Assistant United States Attorney, and I represent the Administrator of GSA. As to the Equal Pay Act claim, that was decided by the motions panel. That's not before the court now. With regard to the discussion about whether Mr. Whitson supervised Ms. Calhoun, there is nothing in the record that shows that he was a supervisor. Indeed,
was she one of the 20?
There's nothing in the record to say she was one of the 20 people. If you look at her resumes...
One of the things that concerned me here is the parties clearly know how big the subsection was and who Mr. Whitson was familiar with. And I thought it was undisputed in the record that he had supervised her at one point. Is that correct?
What is in the record is Ms. Calhoun saying, yes, that he had supervised her maybe a couple of years before. That's what she said. She also said that maybe she was working full-time for the union at the time, and that's on page 233 of the joint appendix. But if you look at her resumes, we do not have the resume for the IT position, but we do have the resumes in the record in the joint appendix for the Langfeld positions, and they're at page 110, starting at 110 and 176. And if you look at those resumes, you never see Mr. Whitson's name as a supervisor. And she has the burden to show. Mr. Whitson, on the other hand, says she worked in the organization. He doesn't say that he supervised her, and that's on page 103, I believe, of the joint appendix.
But he knew who she was, he knew the nature of her qualifications.
Yes, and he said on page 103 that he believed that she worked in a satisfactory performance level.
And he, in deposition, described her in distinguishing her between Mrs. Bradford, that basically she only had she was relying on her educational background.
Yes, he said that again on page 103. He said that hers was primarily education.
And is that accurate? Doesn't the record show much more?
The qualifications that he said were primarily, he didn't say she didn't have the other qualifications, and indeed she was on the referral list, so she obviously qualified for the position. The position advertisement, the vacancy announcement, is a generic announcement. Selecting official can weigh the factors as he or she pleases. As long as it's the person is qualified, you can pick anyone on that best qualified list. And yes, Ms. Calhoun was on the best qualified. But to get back to the question you asked Mr. Fuchs earlier about whether there was evidence that Toki Bradfield was better qualified, or at least better qualified in what Mr. Whitson was looking for, he said, again on page 103, that he wanted somebody that could hit the ground running. And she had been doing the work.
But let me ask you, the problem in this case is the law that talks about what the employer can and cannot do assumes or arises in a context where you don't have pre-selection.
Yes, but there is case law here in the circuit, and the district court cites it at note 5 in his decision, and that says that you have to have some evidence of intentional discrimination to have a claim of pre-selection.
Well, I know, but you're talking about weighing the generic job description. All that comes in the context of a non-pre-selection. So it's the pre-selection evidence, which is not denied here, that has to be factored into the plaintiff's evidence. And Mrs. Calhoun put in evidence that Mr. Whitson had supervised her. And as you say, he obviously knew she was qualified for the job. In other words,
I'm not disputing she may have been qualified for the job. What I'm saying
is I just want to understand what the plaintiff's burden is here in a pre-selection context.
I think that the burden is to show that there is an issue of fact on the issue of intentional discrimination. And we have two issues here. One is he didn't know.
Well.
And the other is that he had a real reason.
Is there evidence from which a reasonable jury could find that he had to have known? That's what we've been discussing with appellant's counsel.
Yes, but the evidence is not sufficient to say when he supervised her. She says a couple of years before. Or how he supervised her. She said, I may have been full-time union. So, yes, she had to have a supervisor, but whether or not he was actually supervising her is really another issue.
If it's a unit of 5,000 people, that's one thing. If it's a unit of 20 people where he knows who the GS-13s are,
Your Honor,
he's advertising a GS-14 job, couldn't a reasonable jury put it all together?
Your Honor, there is no evidence in the record that there were 20 people. There's no evidence in the record that he supervised 20. I mean, that was, you just asked Mr. Fuchs, and that's his response.
Gets all reasonable inferences at this point. There's no evidence that it was 5,000 people either.
No, but certainly the job that was being advertised was the web page manager, the web-based person that provided technical assistance that helped people. And that was a big job. That was covering all of what they called MK, which I'm sure was more than 20 people. And the evidence is clear that Toki Bradfield had that experience. Even Peterson Parker says she was stronger in the IT area. And that is at 173, well, excuse me, let me just tell you, 480 at line 22 and 481 from 1 to 3. She also talks about it at 483, lines 13 through 22, and then, I apologize. I have my notes here, but that's really where the evidence is that Whitson didn't know about Calhoun.
The job description, in saying that there were other things that were relevant to this position, is to be ignored?
No, but the selecting official can decide what factors are supposed to be, are weighed.
That's assuming there's no pre-selection. That's what tilts this case, it seems to me. It's clear that after the period closes, the cases say the supervisor can take a generic job description and weigh the factors. we're not there. And why doesn't that
because,
make a difference?
Because pre-selection itself is not a violation of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. If there was a bad personnel policy, they should have pursued it under the Civil Service Reform Act or some other.
But why wouldn't that be a legitimate consideration for a jury to take into account?
Because under the law, there must be some evidence of intentional discrimination. He did not know that Ms. Calhoun was going to apply. Yes, he wanted Toki Bradfield.
There isn't a direct statement from him that he knew. But the question is there evidence from which a jury could infer he knew she would apply? And you're saying
there is no
absolutely
evidence.
No evidence?
There is no evidence in the record that shows that he would have known that she applied. Mm-hmm. But it's more than that. There has to be intentional discrimination towards Ms. Calhoun based on her race. Towards Ms. Calhoun, it just can't be this general Toki Bradfield, who, by the way, is Asian American, that she somehow, well, I forgot the point I'm making, but there's evidence, overwhelming evidence, and Peterson Parker did find that Toki Bradfield was qualified, more qualified for the IT position because she was doing it daily. IT was new, so it was very important. She says she was a little stronger at 480, lines 15 through 17.
480?
480, 15 through 17. She says Toki Bradfield was doing it every day at 490, 15 through 17, so I may have those sites a bit wrong.
480, 15 to 17 doesn't do it.
490, then it must be.
Yes.
That she was doing the work daily. She was also advised. IT was new, so it was an important area, and she was advising people about technical issues. And let me see if I can. That's at 520, 30, at 30 because those are those mini pages. At between 10 and 15, lines 10 and 15. And the other thing that I think is in...
Let me catch up with you. JA 520.
520 at page 30, because there are four pages of the deposition on that page.
There.
Lines 10 through 15, and that talks about her helping other people on the technical issues. There on page 446... lines 9 through 12, there's a discussion about how she advised on IT policy. And 421, lines 18 through 20, talks about how she maintained the web page. And then...
And so what was enabling her to get this 14?
Her IT,
because
she was more of a technical expert. She was doing what he had designed the job to do. So it went one step from the generic GS-14. The people that applied had to be qualified for the generic position. Once they got on the best qualified list, then the selecting official could weigh the factors.
So what's this reference to the job call for communication skills?
Well, Ms. Peterson Parker felt she couldn't communicate. She was Asian American. She had an accent. She was apparently
shy. That's not fair because that's not what she said. Ms. No. Peterson Parker didn't say she was an Asian American.
Right. No, but she said she had difficulty speaking.
And she said that at one point she asked her to talk and she refused
exactly.
And left. Now, You're making an allegation which is not
supported
by the record that this
had
something to do with discrimination against Asian Americans. Is there anything in the record to suggest that Ms. Peterson Parker's evaluation had something to do with that?
It is, I'm only speculating. And if I said...
You're only speculating.
But
I'm asking you whether there's anything in the record to support.
What is in the record is fairly clear that Ms. Peterson-Parker was very much down on Ms. Tokyo Bradfield.
Yes, and that could be because she thought on the merits, or it could be for some other reason, but there's no evidence in the record that it was for another reason, is there?
You're right.
Okay, so let me ask these questions. Mr. Whitson said to Ms. Peterson-Parker that Calhoun was the superior candidate with respect to all the factors. Is that right?
Other way around.
Was the best person for the job, as I recall.
That's right. So he must have had some comparison in mind, correct?
Yes.
All right. And Ms. Peterson-Parker testified that he knew, that is Mr. Whitson, who was eligible and who could apply for the position, correct? Okay. Now, Ms. Peterson-Parker was actually the selecting official, correct?
Correct.
So a jury could believe that her analysis of which of the elements of the job were relevant was appropriate, right? It would be reasonable for a reasonable jury to think that the selecting official would know which of the various KSAs or whatever they are, the various factors, were relevant to the job. Isn't that right?
Ms. Peterson-Parker said she played no role.
I know she said she played no role, but she was officially the selecting official, right?
She was only doing what Mr.
Yes, that's because there may have been a
quote ordered.
That I understand that, but nonetheless, as the person assigned to be the selecting official, it would be reasonable for a jury to think that her evaluation was at least within the realm of a reasonable one. Isn't that right?
Or is not that, is be it, reasonable under the facts of this case?
So the government's position is not just that it's not resisting the claim, it's that in fact Peterson-Parker knew absolutely nothing about this job and was simply a mouthpiece?
Played no role in the selection.
That's a different question. I'm asking whether she's capable of evaluating two different people's qualifications for the job.
If that were the situation, yes, I believe she would be in a position to evaluate Ms. Tokyo Bradfield, but not as a supervisor. She was a team leader. She says she supervised, but we know Mr. Whitson supervised.
Let's put it another way. If the jury believed that Ms. Peterson-Parker's ability to evaluate was relevant to its decision, then it would then be reasonable for it to look at how Ms. Peterson-Parker herself thought of these two people. Isn't that right?
Well, there's
no suggestion that Ms. Peterson-Parker was an idiot who had no ability to evaluate qualifications. There's no suggestion like that.
That's correct.
Now, the testimony from JA 518 to 522, which is similar to other testimony, is Peterson-Parker's evaluation element by element of the two candidates. And it begins with the view that Ms. Bradfield was the least qualified for the position. And then goes through quite a number of ones in which she gives the plaintiff substantially higher marks than Bradfield. And in some, where she gives Bradfield basically a zero. Why doesn't that raise a genuine issue of material fact about whether there is a substantial difference in the qualifications? That's my question.
Well, first of all, this is 5 years after she has already given an affidavit saying that she thought Ms. Bradfield.
That's a perfectly good reason to disbelieve her, but not enough of a reason to make it not an issue of genuine material fact. That's a credibility. That's an attack on her credibility, which is perfectly fair and maybe a winner at trial. Maybe even probably a winner at trial, but we're at summary judgment, right?
Right.
So our case law is very clear that if the government claims that the reason they chose one over another mm-hmm. was that the one they chose was more qualified, but if in fact there is a genuine issue of material fact as to whether the plaintiff is substantially more qualified, that's enough to get to the trial. This may not be enough to win, but it's enough to get to the trial. That's what we held in Aca. That's what we held in Lathrum. That's what we held in Holcomb. If there is a if there is evidence of a substantial difference in qualification.
The only other than Peterson Parker's testimony 5 years later,
right.
The only thing that the plaintiffs can rely on is plaintiff's education.
I want to know why. I'm with you on all that, and if Peterson Parker hadn't made this testimony, I think you would be walking away here with no problem. What's bothering me, I feel I should tell you so you can tell me what's wrong
absolutely.
With it, is Peterson Parker's testimony. She is somebody who, if I were a juror, I would say, well, look, she's in a position of authority here. Whether she's the best decider about qualifications, whether she's the actual decider about qualifications, GSA obviously thought enough of her to make her officially the decider here on this job. So her testimony about who is better should be something I, as a juror, should listen to. And she testified quite strongly that the winner was the worst and that the loser was the best and that the loser was the best by a significant margin. And I appreciate that there are good challenges. It's not just what you're saying. There are other challenges. Obviously, she's a friend of the plaintiffs. It's another reason on which she could be, her credibility could be attacked. But the ability to attack a credibility is not sufficient to get past the summary judgment issue of whether there's a genuine issue of material fact here. That's what I need you to help me with.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I believe this is probably not going to satisfy you, but it's clear to me that the position was designed
for
an IT technical person. It was designed to have somebody who was doing the web page maintenance. It was designed for Toki Bradford.
Well, okay.
That's what it appears from the record.
So if that were true, if Mr. Whitson had testified, yeah, I pre-selected her, and I pre-selected her because I designed this for her, and that may have been illegal, but it's not discriminatory.
Exactly.
That would be one thing, but that's not my understanding of how he testified. He testified.
Who's testifying?
This is on page 103. This is his affidavit on page 103. And what he actually says is, page 103, it says, and I think that Judge Rogers may have read some of this into the record, but that she, he'd worked with her a long time. She was doing comparable work. I had absolute confidence in her. And then he goes on to say the work in the required announced position, she was doing that work. That's it. On page 103, and it's the third answer down, the third A down, Ms. Bradford had performed similar work required by announced position. And then it goes on to say, she performed this work in an outstanding manner with minimal qualifications. She was clearly ready to, and able to do similar work at a higher level. The nature of the work was of critical importance to the organization and required that the selectee be able to hit the ground running. In my opinion, Ms. Bradford would be able to do this. I believe that the complainant's qualifications were primarily education and that she did not have the depth of experience that the selectee had. And in the IT area.
Where
which
is that?
Is,
where does it say in the IT area?
I am saying to you. And the.
Oh, I know, but you're not testifying.
Well,
I assume you don't want to be.
Well, I don't know what to say. He also expanded on that with the EEO counselor. He said there, she reported, EEO interviewed Paul Whitson. Mr. Whitson stated he actually made the selection for the position.
What page?
And gave, that's on page 210. And gave the direction to Ms. Peterson Parker prior to his going on leave. He stated this position required a set of technical skills relating to the GSA internet page, and the position became the technical advisor for the entire MK organization. He stated that the selectee was a recognized expert and had previously had lead responsibility prior to being given this position, which provided the for greater independence of operation. So, if plaintiff has some burden in this case to show intentional discrimination, some burden.
Well, the burden, that right, and, we've said that burden, of course you're right, but we've said that burden can be, the burden of going to trial, not of winning, but the burden of going to trial is satisfied if.
You're saying that, but that,
I'm not saying I'm reading from one of my own opinions in this.
Which one is that? Tell me.
Lathrum versus Snow, which is repeated in Holcomb, which was repeated recently in Ajani, that if there is a substantial difference in, and which is itself based on our en banc opinion in ACCA, which is if there is a substantial, if there's evidence of the person who loses being substantially more qualified, the jury can take that as evidence of pretext.
Okay. If I could just go back to saying the education was not an issue. It was, education was not a requirement in the vacancy announcement. Education was not in the position description.
No, that's not in the record.
That is not in the record, but that is not because
I know,
plaintiff did not have it.
Let's stick with what's in the record. It's confusing when you go outside the record. I looked for the job description, the job announcement. It's not there.
Why don't we have that? That would help a lot.
You know, plaintiff, appellant, has the job description and has the position description, has a vacancy announcement.
But you're arguing it in support of the government's position. The
government and I'm happy to provide it.
In the record as
well. I'm happy to provide it. Quite frankly, I'm not sure why the vacancy announcement did not get in either on a defendant's side or a plaintiff's side.
It's not accusatory, we're just asking.
But the fact of the matter, it is because of the Porter case. I believe it could have been an important issue. At the time, it didn't seem to be as important because it was quoted from extensively in Peterson Parker. But the fact is, if you would like to have the vacancy announcement,
well,
we can be
provided. We can't look at it since it's not in the record. It wouldn't help us.
Well, perhaps I could request to leave to have something outside the record filed under Rule 10 or some other.
Who is Mr. Phaup? P-H-A-U-P. Who is Mr. Phaup?
He's right here. Mr. Phaup.
Oh, he's counsel in the case. Well, then who is being questioned at 446?
446, I'm sure, must be Peterson Parker. Okay, 446 is Peterson Parker, and that's where she says that based on my observations, however, she would have been stronger in the internet position. That was
Bradfield.
Exactly.
Been stronger on the internet position because she was responsible for maintaining the IT policy.
Exactly.
Okay.
But if I could just go back
Please.
To that, the ability to evaluate. Remember, the record is, the record itself is replete on statements that I played no role in developing this position. I played no role in the creation of this position. I am looking at it. This is not in the record, but it's clear that she was looking at it in a generic way, that she was looking at her management and her policy experience with Ms. Calhoun, which was not something that Mr. Whitson was looking for. He was looking for technical experience.
What was her Peterson
She had
Parker?
Worked with Ms. Calhoun. She had never
what
supervised.
What was her relationship to Mr. Whitson? Wasn't she his?
She was his virtual deputy.
So she would know what. I mean, this wasn't a secret from her.
Calhoun?
No, she would have known what the job was about. She was his virtual deputy, you said.
She testifies. She played no role in it. She says that to the EEO counselor in 209. She says it again on 431.
But she played no role in formulating it, but seemed like it would seem reasonable that the virtual deputy, the person who did formulate it, would know what the job's purpose was.
She actually testified that she could not say what rankings Mr. Whitfield gave to each factor.
Right.
This is where 209, where the EEO counselor reports having interviewed Peterson Parker. She said she believed the selectee possessed the special technical expertise required in this position. As in effect, she was already performing those types of functions. That's not entirely consistent, is it, with her later testimony?
That's exactly right. I would like to point out there was a question in the very beginning about Did it have Peterson Parker's ultimate, did she ultimately comment on the ultimate discrimination or ultimate racial position or racial discrimination, if you recall? And I just wanted to point out that she, that what she said about racial discrimination, I've got my papers out of order, was basically that she could not say. She basically said there might be a discrimination, but I could not say. And she herself was a GS-15 and was fine. Her testimony was fine. I think I can probably find that if you'd like. But she had apparently experienced some discrimination before.
But not from Mr. Whitson.
No. Well, excuse me. She did comment that he didn't give her some training, and she believed that she should have been entitled to it, and she later found out that a Caucasian woman got training. But that was the most she said. She didn't put a time to that. She didn't. If I could, it's just... how you always want to get that last point in, but I can't seem to find it.
Ms. Whitaker, you're way past your...
Yes, I'm sure I am. I guess you don't want to know anything about Mr. Langfeld and his selection.
Nope.
That's the real estate part? Is that...
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Fuchs, we'll give you 2 minutes.
As Judge Garland's question suggests, this is summary judgment, and there are various disputes of fact. Judge Ginsburg pointed out that the later testimony of Ms. Peterson Parker wasn't necessarily consistent with everything that was said in an EEO report that happened at the very beginning of the case. But it is also true that at the time of the hearing, Ms. Peterson Parker had opportunity to think about these issues more, and to the extent there is any dispute in her testimony, that is also a question of credibility, and that is a dispute of fact. It is also true that Ms. Peterson Parker had testified that she had no axe to grind concerning Ms. Bradfield, that she actually thought very highly of her as a person.
Surprising if one of your own witnesses were to begin the testimony by saying, I have an axe to grind against the other side. You probably wouldn't put that witness on. So.
I think actually that might have been my phrase. I don't think she used the phrase an axe to grind. She did say in response to questions as to whether or not she had any animus against Ms. Bradfield, she denied that. She said she felt very highly about her as a person. She had supervised her, but she was aware of her limitations. If a position states that communication is a part, if in fact communications and ability to provide guidance constitute three elements of a fourth element, it's unclear why the agency would have such a position description. And I do believe, as this panel was suggesting, that, and it's just Judge Rogers was suggesting, that Ms. Peterson Parker was in a position to evaluate some of these things. And then finally, I did want to comment on the question of the missing job description. The lack of documents is not something that should be blamed on Ms. Calhoun. Rather, throughout this case, this is clear from our briefs, we have tried to get more documents released, and they were not released, and that is an issue of this case. Finally, I simply want to say about the Equal Pay Act, that's not something that the panel really decided because it wasn't really brought up before. This is something that the district court judge ruled on. He should have reassigned that case from the very beginning. That should have been argued before, but it's being argued now, and we don't think that plain error should be countenanced. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Fuchs. Ms. Whitaker, thank you. Case is submitted.